The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Yes, it is Memorial Day. Yes, we do work on nights, weekends, and holidays if you're in sports. And when the Suns win, you don't wait around until Tuesday to get back at it. So we have a lot to get into today. We have J.A. Adonde joining us from Chicago. J.A., of course, with ESPN, former L.A. Times columnist. And then Coop's going to chop it up with us as well. Bruce Cooper, former Channel 12 sports director. We'll have Bruce Cooper on board. That is all straight ahead on today's show. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. What a weekend, huh? I mean, did you see it coming? Anthony Davis doesn't come out of the tunnel. And now all of a sudden, it's a three-game series. Chris Paul tells Monty Williams, hey, you know what? I want in. Let me in. And so what a game Sunday. And now we look forward to game number five. And can Anthony Davis get out on the floor and play? That'll probably be a game-time decision. The Suns are in a great position now to take this series, in my opinion, if Chris Paul is able to get back at it and get after it, taking two of three from the Lakers. And the best part is for you, LeBron James coming out of the tunnel saying, I got to carry the Lakers on my shoulders. I've got to carry them on my back. Can he do that? So the drama is great. And, you know, for Monty Williams to be able to sit with Chris Paul and say, you know what, let's figure this out. You know, Monty, the way that he handled Chris in game three, I wasn't happy with. And yesterday he said, I was going to sit him. And Chris Paul said, the heck you are, or hell no, was his quote. And so he ends up playing, and it ended up working out for the Suns. So good stuff there on both fronts. We'll get into that shortly with J.A. Adonde. Then you have the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks' winning streak is at one because their 13-game losing streak is over. Bob Nightingale wrote over the weekend Bruce Bochy's name around the Diamondbacks if, in fact, Torey Lovello were to get punched out by the ownership group and be let go. But they have to face Jacob deGrom and the Mets. That will not be easy. Up next, J.A. Adonde. We appreciate you joining us on this Memorial Day. I'm Brad Sessmatt. All right, as promised, the Valley, the state is geeked up. For the first time in 11 years, the Suns are having playoff games, and they're actually alive and kicking now after what happened yesterday in Los Angeles. I want to have a national voice on to give us a feel about what he has seen. J.A. Adonde, of course, you know him at ESPN's Around the Horn. At one point in time, J.A. was in Los Angeles with the L.A. Times. Now he's at Northwestern, the director of sports journalism at the prestigious Medill School. I appreciate you joining us. What do you make just overall out of this series, J.A.?
Oh, the twists and turns and the unpredictability. And it's interesting because the Lakers are a bigger challenge than a team with the number two seed typically faces in the first round, right? There's very unusual circumstances for the Suns to have such a formidable first round opponent. And then this is a tougher challenge than LeBron James usually faces in the first round. I ran the numbers back. He had never lost the opening game of the playoffs, like through his first 12 playoff appearances. Now he's lost three in a row. And now he finds himself in a dogfight, and he could be down his wingman. So the early pressure, the high stakes in the first rounds, for the Suns' perspective, do they want to have this great breakthrough season come to an early conclusion? Can they get more championship playoff experience for Devin Booker, who we've seen has struggled a little bit to adjust to the increased pressure of the playoffs and and the challenges that the playoffs focus. So for me, this is really about the long term for the Suns and getting experience for Booker and Ayton, and can they get as many rounds as possible and then really be ready to make a full run at the championship next year.
Are you surprised the Lakers are in trouble now?
No, just because this hasn't been a great season for them. Yeah. Really, since December, when have they looked like a championship team? So it shouldn't be surprising because we're a long way from December.
And I'm not making excuses on the LA side of things, but I think because of the world we're in, it's been a quick turnaround. And that's a team that has a lot of age on it. And is it just fortunate for the Suns to be all things aligning to meet an aging team where now AD is down, where LeBron's not where he was when he was 5 years younger. All the things feel like, you know what? On the surface, fans here in Phoenix did not want the Lakers in the first round. They should be happy that they get through them if they continue on this way.
I do think you want the Lakers sooner than later this year. And we saw that the Clippers supposedly tried to play their way out of the Lakers' side of the bracket. And we saw that that got them into trouble because they had two hot days of Luka Doncic to deal with. I feel like if you're the Suns, yes, you don't want to see the Lakers. You don't want to see LeBron in the first round. But right now you want to see them sooner rather than later, because this group hasn't played a lot together. And even though LeBron and AD have great chemistry, incorporating pieces such as Andre Drummond, they've got three or four different pieces from last year's championship team that really hasn't had a chance to play together. And like, to me, that's the only question when you look east at the Nets is, okay, this group hasn't played together a whole lot. Will that make a difference? I'm starting to think it won't even matter. They've got so much firepower. But for the Lakers and for the Suns as their opponents, the fact that this group hasn't played a lot together and now is going to have to adjust on the fly to Anthony Davis being in and out of the lineup, I think benefits the Suns.
J.A. Adonde with us for a few minutes as we talk about what's going on with the Suns and Lakers game 5 tomorrow night, knotted up at 2 games apiece. Chris Paul admitting that he and Monty, we're not going to say got into each other, but just had a very passionate conversation. Star player wanted to be on the floor. This is nothing new in sport, but for the fact of the matter that Monty gave in to him in such a big stakes game, what does that say to you about that chemistry within the Suns?
And that Chris Paul rewarded him. Monty and Chris Paul, I go back to the first round they played against the Lakers. I think it was 2011. And they lost the series, but they won 2 more games than really they had a right to win. And I thought it was that combination of Monty Williams and Chris Paul that was able to steal 2 games from the Lakers in that series. And we've seen it working again here in Phoenix. Ultimately, the trust that Monty had in his player and Chris Paul rewarding him. And in the second half, he looked like Chris Paul again for the first time in a while. He was getting to his spots, coming off the screens, shooting those little pull-up jumpers with proper form. He wasn't shot putting it up there. And so if the Suns can get that Chris Paul, now they have home court advantage regained. That puts them in a driver's seat.
If Anthony Davis doesn't play, is there any chance that LeBron can carry this thing through and win 2 of the next 3?
There's certainly a chance, and you don't want to rule out LeBron James. And I ran the numbers earlier. He's won 12 out of 20 series when he's lost the first game of the series in the best of 7. And that just doesn't happen. That's twice the average for the rest of the NBA. So you just can't view him as a typical opponent. He hasn't lost a conference playoff series since 2010. I mean, the stats are phenomenal. So if anyone is capable of doing this, it's LeBron. You just wonder if he is able to pull it off, the amount of energy it would take for him to expand, the amount of high-level basketball it means he's going to have to play over a 2-week stretch. You wonder what that would leave him for the rest of the playoffs.
Jay, before I get you out of here, I want to flip it a little bit over to what you do at Medill, because I like it when I have people on and I have some time to do a few things. So let's start with what's going on with fans and their anger and throwing things at players and spitting at players and what the NBA is doing. What do you see that is going on? Is it because of what's happened the last 16 months? Is it because of George Floyd? Is it because of the election? Is it because of the anger built up? What do you see about what's happening? Because this is becoming almost a daily deal now in the NBA.
To me, it's we've seen America's return to the default setting in a lot of ways. We see crime, shootings here in Chicago. There's shootings all the time. And the sports manifestation of that is poor behavior in Boston. But it's not the first time we've had incidents in Boston. It's not the first time we've had incidents in Utah. You look at some of the places where the fan behavior is taking place, Philadelphia, is that any surprise? So these are all places with a history, pre-pandemic, post-pandemic. None of this comes as a shock, as a surprise, or none of this I think can rely on the pandemic as an excuse, because we've seen it happen before, and in particular in these places. So it's just a reminder that the desire to get back to normal, well, normal wasn't all it was cracked up to be. And you would hope that we could use the pandemic to reset, and this time apart to reset some things and rethink some of our values. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is just a return to the norm.
That's well put. I'm concerned in the industry that we're in. I'll give you an example. Anthony Davis leads with a foot right to Jay Crowder's groin. And you saw the play in game two. Because the game went the way it went, we were allowed to visit with Jay Crowder for about 3 to 4 minutes after the game was over, and there was nowhere for that to be brought up. So contextually, there was nothing said whether that was a dirty play, clean play, and yet it was a factor in it. In the NFL, there's concern about locker rooms not being reopened. I'm curious from your view with where you sit at Medill, where do you think media is going? Because fans are not being given the whole story and able to tell it through 5 minute, 4 minute Zooms and 8 questions. Thank you very much.
Right. And it won't just be for these moments and these specific questions of these games, but the fact that the media is not allowed to spend time around these athletes to get to know them. And not just the players, the assistant coaches, the athletic trainers, the scouts that you would sit next to and watch a game and pick up some tidbits from. All the things that make reporters better informed, better conduits for information, better storytellers, all these little moments are being taken away, and you wonder to what extent we'll go back. So it's sad. We've gone back to the normal for misbehavior, but will we go back to the norm for the access that the media used to enjoy? It'll never go fully back. Just like once the media started getting moved away from the courtside seats and into the upper levels of the arena, that ain't coming back. I can't imagine we'll have the full fledged access that we enjoyed for so long. And it's really sad. And you know, the players will actually hurt from it too, because the stories will be incomplete.
Correct.
Know, and I know that they have access to social media and they can get their side of the story out, but will the complete stories be told?
Sure. If Chris Paul does not go down that path yesterday in the post game with Rachel Nichols, we'd never know.
Yeah.
Correct. And so,
Able to talk around and ask different people and get the full story. You know, for example, one time Shaq told the story. Shaq gets hurt, comes back in a playoff game against the Spurs, and he tells this elaborate tale of how he was back in the trainer's room and the phone rang and his dad was on the phone saying, you need to get your butt back out on the court. So he did. And so it was this funny story and everybody's kind of going with it. And I'm meandering around the arena afterward, and I bump into the Laker athletic trainer at the time, Gary Vitti. And I said, So, you know, what was it like when the phone rang? He said, phone. I said, Shaq said his dad called him in the trainer's room. And he said, there's not a phone in there. And so I'm like, okay. So I was able to catch Shaq on his way out to the parking lot. And I said, Shaq, come on. There's no phone in there. And he said, well, no, he called me on my cell phone. I said, you had your cell phone there? I said, come on.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of smiles and he says, marketing. So that whole story was fun, but it never happened. And you know, I was able to get to the truth of the story and get Shaq to fess up that he made it up. But if he had just told that story on a Zoom press conference, people would have just believed it because they wouldn't have had any information to counter it.
It's kind of like Naomi Osaka's stance right now, right? I'm sure you've been following that.
And that's disturbing. I will say this. I supported her when she was prepared to not play a match last year out of protest and her desire to make a statement and basically where her head was at the time. She just didn't feel it was appropriate to play tennis at that time. And that was her job is to play tennis. Part of her job is speaking to the media, but her job is to play tennis. So if she was willing to not do her job to make a point, then I'm not going to single out the fact that she's not willing to do a part of her job. You know, I would hope that there could be communication. I would hope that there could be some type of medium reached. And honestly, I would hope that she would have a chance to speak to the media to address some of their concerns, because you've heard some of those press conferences. Yeah. some of the questions are inappropriate or aren't, you know, well thought or really can be a waste of time. So there does need to be improvement. I think she's making a point, and I think she has the right to make this point. I wish she wouldn't, but it's not always about what we want, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's fascinating, that is for sure. Hey, good stuff. I appreciate your time and your insight on many fronts. Thanks, J.A.
All right, great catching up with you.
There's J.A. Adonde, and we're back with more after this time out. All right, thanks again to J.A. Adonde on the National View. Now let's go local with Coop, because Coop is, this has got to drive you crazy. Bruce Cooper, formerly at 12 News, it's been almost a year since he said, I'm out of here, I pulled the ripcord. He's doing great work over at St. Vincent de Paul, but he's still involved in the sports area. Were you on Channel 15 the other night? Did that happen?
I was. I joined Greg Fooey and GCU head coach Bryce Drew, and we talked a little Game 4 Suns victory over the Lakers.
Wow. Look at you getting out, huh? So scratching the itch. Is that the best way to put it, Bruce?
That's the best way to put it, Brad. Say it any better.
All right. Are they going to win? They're going to win, right? If Davis doesn't play, they're going to win.
If Davis doesn't play, for sure they'll win. I know he's going to give it everything he can, pull a CP3, if you will, and get back out on that court. But I'm going to tell you, Brad, I have been there. I've seen this. When that crowd at Phoenix Suns Arena gets to rocking the way I know it's going to rock tomorrow night, you know, it does something to elevate the play of players. We've had some Suns players who have struggled in this series, and I expect Mikal Bridges, I expect Cam Johnson,
wow,
and I expect Jay Crowder. I expect those guys to be elevated and lifted by tomorrow night's crowd, because we know what we're going to get from a Booker. We know what we're going to get from CP3, I think. What I saw from CP3 Sunday night was certainly encouraging as it relates to the rest of this series.
Okay, you left out DeAndre Ayton. What do you make out of him so far? Because, you know, but this is even before you left. You know, enigma. And here we are 10 months later, and I want to say he's over the hump. I want to say it, Bruce.
You know, Brad, we've been here. We've seen that and done that before with DeAndre Ayton. It looks like he'll get a stretch after he's been harshly criticized, and we say, "Wow, that's a 2-week straight stretch where he's playing extremely well." Yeah, CP3, he's definitely done it. Pushed him over the other side, and then all of a sudden you see that laziness, if you will, for lack of a better word, or his lack of energy, his lack of focus, it comes back into play. Now, we all talked about him being the X factor going into this series. Yep. We just hoped that he would be engaged for an entire 7-game series. Well, let me put it to you like this. If it were not for DeAndre Ayton, we wouldn't even be talking 2-2 in this series. You know, the Suns would most likely be swept or facing a 3-1 deficit. But DeAndre Ayton has put this team on his shoulders, and he has carried them. I mean, what he did yesterday, very impressive. I mean, 14 points, 17 rebounds. This young man has been the absolute key to what the Suns have been able to do thus far in this series.
But, and I agree with everything you're saying, but, and this is a positive, this is a compliment, but he's also been able to not let Drummond and Marcus Gasol, and even when Markieff came in yesterday, because you know what Markieff's out there to do. He's just out there to bully. He hasn't let those guys get into him. Like Booker the other night, they got into him, and he lost his composure, which has been a negative trait of Devin Booker's. He complains too much, and yet I heard Monty and Chris Paul and Jay Crowder say yesterday, yeah, we had to block out all the noise, and I feel like while Ayton has kept his composure, Booker has not. Until yesterday, it felt to me like some people got into him. Maybe they closed the hotel door room and said, dude, you've got to let things go. Am I right on this or am I wrong on this?
Brad, you are 1,000 with this. I mean, Devin Booker, you know, he's so competitive and he wants to be the best at what he does. He wants to be the best out on that floor at all times. But when he starts to struggle, his shot's not going, you know, people start talking trash to him, and he can allow
He whines.
Absolutely. And we saw that in game three Thursday night in Los Angeles. I mean, he let his frustrations get the best of him. And so, yes, he pushed KCP in. I believe it was who was it that he pushed here? I can't remember now. But he
late
pushed,
in the game. Yeah.
Pushed and he got a flagrant two, was ejected from the game. And so, you know, from this standpoint, that he was able to play through any type of negativity, because, you know, I know coming into the game Sunday afternoon, that he was talked to about this very thing. Look, man, we need you in the game. We need your head in the game. You can't lose your emotions. You have to stay cool and calm. And look, I think having CP3 back on the floor, back playing his usual role, I think it played a calming effect, not only for Devin Booker, but for everybody out on the floor.
Okay, I have not agreed with Monty Williams on Chris Paul since game two. After game two, I said, you've got to sit him for the weekend in Los Angeles. And he ended up playing him, and he didn't show up on the floor in the fourth quarter of game three. So you played him rather than resting him, and he could have had 5 days off. Then yesterday, Monty is going to bench Chris Paul, and Chris Paul's like, hell no, is what his quote was, I'm playing. Now, I think it's only fair game in postseason to question rotations and players. Monty's terrific. He should be coach of the year. But I'm just surprised at how he went about it with Chris Paul. You?
Well, yes and no, Brad. When you're dealing with an elite athlete, a sure ballot first Hall of Famer, in Chris Paul. I mean, we know what his legacy is. Those type of players, they don't want to sit. They think they can be difference makers, whether they're, for Chris Paul, maybe we know he wasn't 100% physically, but he has a mind, and his mind is 100%. He figures that me being a coach out on the floor, me being a leader out on the floor, I can be an asset. I can be a plus to that team. So, you know, it's going to be tough for Monty to sit him. You want to say Phil Jackson, you want to say any of the great coaches, great profit, it's going to be tough to sit the great ones. They don't want to see that. And so it takes a strong coach to say, no, this is for the betterment of the team. And look, I know Phil Jackson would have lost the war of trying to sit a Michael Jordan. He would have lost the war trying to sit a Scottie Pippen. So I really don't feel that Monty Williams is going to win this. I do appreciate what Chris Paul said. He said, if you notice that I'm not being me within the first couple of minutes, sit me. You know, and so I appreciate that. I appreciate his determination as well. And keep in mind, we know going into these playoffs that Chris has had a history of being hurt in the postseason. It follows him. And here it cropped up once again in game one. And it's like, man, come on, man. And yet here you have to admire him wanting to play through this, thinking that he can make a difference. He's carried this team to the second best record in the league, to 51 wins, to a Pacific Division title. These are things no one thought was even possible coming into the season. This man has done that, and yet he wanted to continue. And let's put it like this, you know, kind of reshape his playoff legacy.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I'm just been interested to see how Monty has handled this. And it's the first time where I've kind of tilted my head sideways. And I have no problem with Saric not playing. I have no problem. Kaminsky should have played earlier. I thought the first couple games, Frank Vogel did a nice job of getting everybody involved. He had 11 guys on the floor 8 minutes into game two. Okay. So Monty shortened the bench. And it just feels like if Anthony Davis doesn't play, LeBron can't do it anymore. And it's really going to come down to that, unless we're going to see something. Look, if Anthony Davis doesn't play and the Lakers win this series, then we will see the big old S on the chest of LeBron James. No question, right?
No question. And look, Brad, he had a chance to do just that in Sunday's game four. Keep in mind, the Suns in game three in Los Angeles trailed only 43-40 at the half. Third quarter, start the third quarter. LeBron James put on that Superman cape, drove twice to the basket for uncontested layups, if you will, just bullied his way in there. And then we saw Anthony Davis with a short paint shot. And all of a sudden, that three-point deficit was 9. Monty Williams called a timeout. Suns never back in that game. Well, no Anthony Davis to start Sunday's game 4 in the third quarter. LeBron James, look at his numbers. He only scored 3 points in that third quarter. He had 3 turnovers in that third quarter. Mm-hmm. The Lakers were outscored by 12. Suns carried a 4-point halftime lead and expanded it to 16 going into the fourth quarter. And there was no S or Superman cape that LeBron James wore in Sunday's game 4. So you have to ask yourself, well, is LeBron James physically fit? You know, can he be that guy that we've seen in the past? Because at 36 years of age, it didn't look like he. If you look at his final numbers, I mean, his final numbers look good, Brad. But when it mattered most in that third quarter, he couldn't do it. And yet Chris Paul, he seized the moment. Chris Paul had 8 of his team high 18 points in that third quarter. That man smelled blood in that third quarter, and he went and seized the moment, unlike LeBron James.
But you know what will happen then in game 5? If LeBron, people are just going to lean in a little bit more to see if he can do it. Like, this is great. This is not a boring, like, okay, Memphis and Utah, Portland it's like, okay, if LeBron has anything left in the tank, if this is the beginning of the end of his legacy, it's going to be these next 3 games. Because if you're a one and done at 35, 36, people are going to say the demise started. And yeah, they had to try to win a title last October in the regular season, all that grind, all that stuff. It just may be too much, or we're going to see something unbelievable the next few days. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah. LeBron can definitely elevate his star even more. I mean, if that's even possible. I mean, everyone already considers him the second greatest player in this league has ever seen. Of course, the millennials don't believe that. They think he is the greatest, but yeah, he can elevate his star even more, Brad, if at 36 years of age, with an injured Anthony Davis and the odds stacked against him, the Suns owning home court advantage in this best of 3 series now, if he is able to physically carry the Lakers over the top, it's going to be off the chart. And I'm going to tell you something, as I look to what awaits them in the second round, if he does this, I mean, I got a lot. I think I would like the Lakers' chances against either a Portland or
I'd like the Suns' chances, Bruce. I mean, it's like they're this close, it feels like to me. I don't see another team that the Suns can't match up with in the rest of the West. I really don't. And so you're playing a Western Conference final in the first round. That's really what's going on. All right, I'll let you go off that. Good stuff, as always. Hey, before I get you out of here, what's new at St. Vincent de Paul? What are you doing over there?
We actually have a water drive that we're starting, Brad. ABC 15 is helping us in this, along with Bashes. As you know, this pandemic has forced more people out on the streets, more families in need. And so as we try to get back to normal, our needs are even greater in the community. So keeping people hydrated, keeping people cool during these triple digit summer months is vital and huge. So that's what I'm working on right now, Brad.
That's good stuff. And I know you'll have an eye on the game tomorrow night. There's Bruce Cooper. And it's great to talk with Coop. And we're back with more after this timeout.